Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions walked away from Phoenix on Sunday with a 20-13 win over the Arizona Cardinals. Pretty much dominated the whole way, but it came at a cost.
Yeah.
Several injuries in the game. We're going to talk about them in a few minutes. This upcoming week, they play on Monday Night Football against the Seattle Seahawks. So everybody's, all excited for that one. Lions will be 2-1 going into Seahawks, an undefeated and surprising 3-0.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a, they have a whole new regime. They've overhauled their coaching staff. They have new schemes. But off to a great start for them. They're 3-0. We'll get into, how their path has been a little easier than the Lions so far, but that's just part of the deal, right? That every team's start of the season is different. And, I think the injury bug is an issue for Detroit this week, but it's also one that many teams are dealing with, and you just gotta rely on your depth. And this team has depth, so we'll see how they'll adjust.
And the Monday Night Football works out for the Lions, well, for Detroit sports fans, because Tigers will be playing in game 162 against Chicago White Sox on Sunday afternoon, I believe it is. Hopefully they'll have already clinched a spot in the playoffs by the magic numbers 2 as of this recording. So
that's pretty
that
exciting.
Miracle happening across the street has been quite a surprise to everybody. And it's a good time. Good time for Detroit sports, and nobody would have expected this.
Yeah, certainly not. I don't follow the Lions or the Tigers as closely as I do the Lions, of course. But
well, this is not a Tigers podcast. That was
it's
all.
but it's definitely energized the city, and I think it's contagious, right? Like when one team is doing well, it's very infectious towards the other fan base or the other, fans of other sports, and they fans carry that energy over, and it's good for the city right now.
All right, let's start digging into that Cardinals game or what happened. Well, all right, first we're going to do the transactions, then we're going to dig into the injuries. Derek Barnes, Marcus Davenport, those are two big defensive starters, both sent to IR. Marcus Davenport was like, nah, he's done for the year. Now it's like, well, he's probably done for the year, which I guess still means done for the year.
Right.
And Derek Barnes, we have no idea. It could be anything.
Unfortunately, that's the long and short of it right there, right? We just don't know on Barnes, and Davenport sure seems like it's season ending, but they're leaving the door open just like they kind of left the door open for Kaminsky and Emmanuel Mosley. It's maybe he's ready for the end of the year type of thing. But yeah, it as you pointed out, these are the two guys that were alternating the edge spot opposite Aiden Hutchinson, depending in both sets, right? In your base set, it was Derek Barnes. In your sub package, it was Davenport, and sometimes it was both of them. And to lose them both, it's pretty significant because it impacts both schemes, and you have to find a way to replace, both guys. And there's not really a one for one, right? Like it's there's this going to have to be a collection of people who step up to help out, because there's not another guy that has Marcus Davenport's skill set or has Derek Barnes' skill set. And so I think you'll see a collection of people trying to pick up the slack. Ideally, Derek Barnes isn't out that long, because I think he's the one that's a little harder to replace. And, you can get by with Davenport with like Josh Pascal, a little bit Levi Onwuzurike, but Barnes is a unique cat in the fact that he can drop into coverage, he can rush the passer, he can do a little bit of everything there. And I don't really have another guy who can do that. So I think Barnes is going to be the trickier one to replace.
51 snaps between the two of them on Sunday, and they both got injured. Neither of them finished the game, right? Davenport didn't finish.
Davenport did, but he missed a little period of time, and you could tell he was feeling it. But yeah, it was Barnes left at halftime or just before halftime, and he did not come back.
So 51 snaps out of 59 defensive snaps. That's a lot to replace.
Yeah.
Offensive side of the ball, wide receivers Tim Patrick and Allen Robinson both signed to the 53-man roster.
Yeah, and Isaiah Williams, who was the only wide receiver who was injured, is no longer injured. His abdomen has been cleared and he's no longer on the injury report. So they now have a full six wide receivers, which is, surprising because a couple of days ago they only had four. And so I really think five is the sweet spot, which means could maybe Isaiah Williams be vulnerable if they need to promote a guy? Maybe. Could Isaiah Williams be a guy that they stash and develop? I think they have space for it because really you're only doing that with Manu right now. So you could kind of stash Isaiah Williams for a while if you need to. At the same time, you're probably going to be elevating practice squad players on the defensive side of the ball. And so how many times can you do that before you have to make a roster move on the 53? So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But for now, they get both their veteran wide receivers, Tim Patrick and Allen Robinson. Tim Patrick played like 50 snaps. He played a ton. And Allen Robinson played one snap. But it won't be long before they, I think, even those guys out a little bit more or increase Robinson's snaps. But I do think Tim Patrick's going to be a guy that continues to play a big role until Allen Robinson can prove he's valuable enough to stay out there for more snaps.
Only one catch between the two of them. Tim Patrick, one catch for 8 yards in that game. Worth mentioning. But they have that you've talked about it all last week and talked about it for weeks, in fact, that it's the big receiver, the guy bigger than 6 feet that's playing on the outside, it kind of gets everything in line for Amon-Ra St. Brown and helps out Jameson Williams. All right, moving on. Injury report. Finally, 2 weeks he was not on the injury report. He has now surfaced on the injury report. Center Frank Ragnow, a pectoral injury, I believe it's a torn pectoral muscle, will not play on Sunday. I always thought the torn pectoral muscle would put you out for the year, but not Frank Ragnow. He's not playing Sunday.
I don't know what the severity of it is, right? Like they're saying it was a mild tear, which means it's something that could just
Mild
be,
tear.
I don't know. Listen, I don't know. It's apparently not significant enough that they were at one point even considering letting him play this week. Like there, that's the point he was at. But I really think with the bye week, next week in week five, it just made a lot of sense for them to give him 2 full weeks of rest, maybe a third if he needs it. And then, maybe he could still potentially play when they come out of the bye. But yeah, getting him, maybe 20 days worth of rest could really do some wonders for that. And we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Like I said, it sounds terrible at the same time. And at the same time, it could be a wide range of severity. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see. But they don't think it's a long-term thing. They think he's only going to be down for a little bit.
With his injury, does it Graham Glasgow slides over to center, and then Awoshika or Nice is going to step in at left guard? What's the word on that?
They haven't really they're keeping it under wraps. But that I think is what makes sense is to move Nice. I'm sorry, it's just to move Glasgow over and then either Nice or Aushika move them up to guard. My guess is it would be Aushika because he's been a guy they've relied
Experience.
on. Yeah, lots of experience. He is repped at left guard for all of training camp. That's a good spot for him, and he seems very capable, very prepared. So that's the way I'm leaning is that they're going to go with him.
Right. Next up, tight end Sam Laporta, ankle injury, did not practice on Thursday.
Yeah, that's also a mild low ankle injury. So he is expected to be okay. It's not uncommon for the Lions to rest a player who was injured in the game for the first practice of the following week. So you get injured in the game, the next time you're ready to practice, you usually don't with the Lions. That's their MO. So you'll see that with a couple of guys here, but Laporta gets injured. So they give him a day off to start the week.
Offensive tackle Dan Skipper, ribs, did not practice Thursday. He played in almost 25% of the offensive snaps on Sunday. The Lions went a lot with the six offensive linemen setup.
Yeah, and he was injured like the first or second series. Like he was injured very early and then was played through it without really an issue. So again, I think this is just a rest and recovery type of thing. I'm expecting him to be back at practice, unless for some reason it's like it just there was like a residual effect after the game ended where, the adrenaline wears off and now it turns out it's more significant than you would have predicted. So I do think he's probably in line to return for that OT3 role, but we'll see how it goes. He's got to show up at practice.
Defensive tackle Aleem McNeil shoulder injury limited on Thursday.
Now, Aleem said he's going to play. In the locker room, Aleem said, "Yep, I'm going to be okay." And he's expecting to play, so I will take him at his word and say a limited practice is good enough, and his word is good enough for me. I'm expecting him to be out there, which is, I think, big news.
Played only in a quarter of the snaps on Sunday.
Yeah, because he exited and didn't return either. Exited in the first half, and so apparently that extra day is certainly going to help him.
Defensive lineman, so defensive tackle, defensive end, Levi Onwuzurike, knee injury limited on Thursday.
Yeah, and so he was injured during the game, but stayed and played. And so he's a guy I would have expected maybe not to have participated as well. But he did. And the fact that he did is another good sign that I think he'll be okay as well. Just a the fact that he played through it and then he's practicing again already, I think those are great signs.
Now he's going to have to pick up at least some of the slack with the
Yeah.
Davenport injury between and Barnes in a way, right? Like the
Yeah.
Onwuzurike and Pascal. Well, Pascal's going to have to play a lot more snaps, but it
Yes.
looks like that Onwuzurike, his snaps are going to edge their way up as well.
I agree. I agree.
Linebacker Alex Anzalone, concussion, limited or no full practice on Thursday.
Yeah, full practice is good because it's kind of like the end of the protocol, or maybe even he's done with the protocol. It's not really clear, and they don't have to announce it, so they're not going to. The fact that he missed last week's game means he, because of injury, means he has to be on the injury report this week. So therefore, he's going to be on it, even if he cleared the protocol. Regardless, cleared or not, he looks like he's at the end, which means it looks like he's in a good spot to return as well.
So now Alex with Anzalone returning, but without Barnes, and I don't, do we want to, and maybe we don't want to get into this yet. Maybe we get into it when we talk about the Seahawks starters.
No, let's talk now.
Anzalone is going to be playing the Will linebacker position,
Correct.
right?
Yep,
And is
correct.
Campbell going to vacate his Mike position and play more of the Sam position, leaving a guy like Malcolm Rodriguez or Jalen Reif-Maybin to come in and play the Mike? Now, because if they move Anzalone over to the Mike, we've seen what, I mean, this is my whole thing, that he's much better in the Will position than he is the Mike.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to move him off Will. I think he's there. And that's where they like him. And I think that's where he's at his best. And I think they realize he's at his best there as well. What we saw last week when Barnes left was they started rotating players through that Sam spot. And Malcolm was at the Will, so he didn't really get a lot of run. But Reeves-Maybin and Neiman both played at that kind of in that Sam role. Now, I don't think Reeves-Maybin or Neiman are suited for it, but I do think Malcolm is an interesting guy that you can use in there situationally. Maybe not to go in there and set the edge, but he's a guy that you can, drop into coverage and you can blitz him and you can rush him. He can live up at the line and stuff like that as well. So I do think Malcolm is a guy who's probably going to be the one they rely on the most. But I think it makes sense to keep Jack Campbell at the mic because, again, I think that's where he's at his best as well. So I'm not expecting a big shakeup of guys. I just think more opportunities for Malcolm, as well as a few more for maybe Reeves Maben, could mean Trevor Nowoski finds his way on the field as well. He's got a skill set that I think is very similar to Barnes, and so he's a guy who could maybe be used situationally as well. I think it's going to be a collective is what's going to happen, right? That Sam role is going to be a whole collection of different linebackers depending on what they're looking to do.
Does this mean that we're going to see James Houston on Monday? Now, I know, like, because everybody makes a big deal about James Houston, but
Sure.
he's been kind of in the doghouse or whatever. He just hasn't been deemed good enough by the coaches to see the field. To me, it's not a big deal if he doesn't play, like, because
Yeah.
it's already 2 years ago when he was really effective. So, I don't know. Watch Monday, he'll go out and have two sacks, which will be great. And it'll be fine that I'm wrong, but.
Well, here's the deal. If they Jack they asked Dan Campbell about would James Houston's pass rush or would he his opportunities increase to be a pass rusher more? And Dan Campbell basically said no, like in a roundabout way, was like, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I really, and then he's like, let me tell you about Josh Pascal and how great Josh Pascal is.
Oh boy.
And so
Yeah, they're done with them, man. Houston's on his way out. I just hope he doesn't sign with the Packers or the Vikings once he's gone.
I think he's it's interesting to see what they're how they're going to utilize him because even the game that he played where when Davenport was hurt in week two, Houston only played four snaps like on D like that's it. He played four. And so he really wasn't even utilized when the opportunities were there previously. So I don't know if he why he would be utilized more when the opportunities aren't there and so are there again. Like, I mean, so it seems logical to give him more opportunities. At the same time, they sh the way they're talking, it sure sounds like they're not preparing for that.
Cornerback Ennis Rakestraw, hamstring injury, limited practice Thursday.
So hamstring injuries take about a week to 10 days, typically, like an average hamstring injury. He injures his hamstring in warm-ups before that Sunday's game. 10 days have passed, and now he's back on the practice field. So kind of on par for an average hamstring injury. So that's good news. He's limited, so that means he's getting some practice in, and hopefully he'll get a chance to get back on the field because yeah, he needs the experience.
Safety, Brian Branch, concussion, limited Thursday.
Yeah, the fact that he's on the field already is very encouraging because it means he's gone through the early stages of the protocol pretty quickly. That's good. Now, head injuries are all unique, and so he could slow down at any point, but signs are good that he's headed in the right direction. Keep your fingers crossed and hope he can play because when he does, he makes for a very dynamic safety duo, and he's arguably the second best defender on the field.
Safety, Ifeoma-Lifanwu, ankle injury, did not practice Thursday.
I don't under I it, like at this point, even if he comes back, he's not going to acclimate in time to play, which means he's probably going to miss this week, which means he's probably going to have missed all four games, which is in hindsight a disappointment that you didn't just IR him and let him heal. And so unfortunately, he looks like he's in a spot where who knows when he's going to recover. He'll get the bye week, of course, which will be hopefully helpful for a slow healing injury. But my goodness, he's just watching the last year of his contract just disappear in front of his eyes, and I'm sure that's got to be very frustrating for him.
Although maybe less frustrating for the Lions front office. I guess it depends if, he's
Certainly.
been injured a lot
Yeah, every
in
year.
his 4 years. So like,
Yeah.
yeah, they're going to want to re-sign him. And him being hurt all the time kind of helps the team because like his price keeps going down, down, down. But at the same time, they're just signing a guy who gets injured a lot. So I
Certainly.
don't know. I would think this is a guy they're going to want to keep around long term, and hopefully he comes back. And then, hey, if we're lucky, he'll play, 10 great games at the
Yeah.
end of the season, and what we just kind of talked about here evaporates. But
Yeah, it'd be great.
yeah.
I hope that happens, to be honest.
Let's talk about the Cardinals game offensively. Lions dominant in all phases. Offensively, Goff had a very good first half, maybe a little more uneven of a second half.
Yeah, he was just going. He didn't miss a throw in the first half. He had a touchdown. He
Yeah, was it 14 of 14?
what's that? Say that
12
again?
of 12? How many? Didn't he start
Yeah.
with?
It was either 12 of 12 or 14 of
Yeah,
14. I think it
that
might have been
crazy.
12 of 12 and it going into the half. But yeah, he was great. Great decision making, great throws, great anticipation. Everything was great. Very uneven second half though. Still made some good throws, made some bad decisions as well, took some unnecessary sacks. Like you saw some things that you're hoping go away. As the season wears on. But I thought the first half was very encouraging. If he can, now he doesn't have to be perfect all the time, but if he plays in a similar fashion that he did in the first half, this offense is gonna just really take off, right? And it's gonna be the offense that we were anticipating seeing this whole time. Right now they're doing great, but they're still not fully operating on all cylinders.
Right. They took a 2-score lead, and you just kept getting this feeling like they're going to blow this game wide open. This could be like a 30-10 game or
Yeah.
whatever. And it just never
Yeah.
got there.
Yeah, they got
And
I
all
was gonna
right,
say
go ahead.
they got conservative, right? Like they were happy with a 2-score lead and they almost like took their foot off the gas. Because I agree with you. If they would have kept like pressuring, I think they could have really blown it the doors off of Arizona.
Lions, did get a 2-score lead. They were up 20-10 when at halftime, and then throughout the whole third quarter, no scoring in the third quarter. So they just hammered the ball on the ground. The team had 187 yards rushing total in the game, 105 for Montgomery, 83 for Gibbs, 6 for Jared Goff. The design run plays for Jared Goff. It's a thing of beauty. Offensive line was great in that respect. It's weird because it's hard to say anything bad about the offense in this game, but at the same time, it's like, well, they just didn't stuff the ball in the end zone. And there was the disastrous reverse to Jamison Williams, where, but whatever, it was one, they ended up winning. It was just one play out of a,
Right.
you know, out of 60 some. So,
The hook and ladder was a lot of fun.
oh, well, that was fantastic. And I saw it a million times after I sat it while
Sure.
watching the game is why don't more teams do that? Like, it seems that offense is advanced enough to where, like, it should
I
be
think
planned for a lot more. It shouldn't be a trick. It should just be, oh, this is just another thing we do.
it's just a trust factor, right? Like they don't
Yes.
like to catch the ball and then put the ball in the air to another player. They just don't trust that it'll happen. I also enjoyed the crowd surfing that David Montgomery did on one of his runs where the Cardinals picked him up and they just pushed the O line or the offensive line just pushed for another 7 yards. I thought that was a very humorous moment to enjoy. Really shows, I think that play more than anything really illustrates the mentality that this team has, especially on offense, where they just want to bully people and even if you pick our guy up off the ground, we're still gonna gain yardage by pushing the whole pile. And so a
That was a
some
great. That
couple.
was play of the day. Forget. I mean, the hook and ladder was great, but that Montgomery run where he got lifted and then carried down the
That
field.
was great.
Yeah, a couple of really memorable plays in this game.
I think the running game has really been on point, and they'll need it again this week, but the running game has been as advertised. The passing game has been kind of hit and miss. And really, if they can get the passing game going, and hopefully the signings of Patrick and Allen Robinson will help that. But if they can get their rhythm, get their passing game going, man, They're just a few execution plays away from this really turning into a very explosive offense again.
Stat line of the year will be Jahmyr Gibbs, zero receptions for 20 yards and a touchdown.
Right. When I saw that, I was trying to figure out until I remembered that it was the latter part of the play that got him that zero receptions. It's a very unusual stat, though, for sure.
All right, flipping over the defensive side of the ball. They never let Kyler Murray just kind of unleash being Kyler Murray. He did have 45 yards on the ground,
Yeah.
but they did have more passing yards than the Lions, although they were playing catch up. But he never got into any type of rhythm.
Yeah, especially in the second half. Like in the second half, he was, once they got up two scores and there was like 20 minutes left, or maybe, just before the fourth quarter, he just started like launching balls and he was on his back foot. He was starting to feel the pressure. The Lions were starting to tee off with the pressure a little bit more. Like at the beginning of the game, they played contain. And then as the game wore on, that contain, they started to squeeze to create that pressure. And then by the halfway through the third quarter, they were just squeezing the crap out of that pressure. And they were just, it just was harder and harder and harder. He was throwing off his back foot. And then it just became a lot of overthrows and reaches and him trying to get a first down on one throw instead of actually executing their offense. And they didn't have an answer. And the Lions were just content to maintain their two-score lead, keep pressuring them with the defense, run the ball and the clock, and just let their defense win it in the second half. And that's certainly what ended up happening because, I think to do what they did was good, but to do what they did after losing Derek Barnes for the game, after losing Nalim McNeal for the game, and still be able to generate the type of defensive effort that they did, I thought was pretty remarkable. And it's a good indicator of the progress that this defense has made this offseason and first couple of games.
Yeah, it was probably the defense's best game in the first 3 weeks. They held the Cardinals 87 yards rushing, held James Conner, who was a pretty good running back, to only 17 yards, albeit in 9 carries. Maybe if we look back later in the year, the stat line for Marvin Harrison Jr., 5 catches, 64 yards, and a touchdown. No massive plays. They did give up the touchdown, but this is a guy who's going to be healthy. He's going to have some massive stat lines in
Yeah.
games. Later on in the season, we may look back on this like, hey, well, they did a good job bottling up this offense. And they're not sure. Plus, after the Cardinals, what did they score on the Rams? It was like 40 points on the
40,
Rams.
41. Yeah, they
Yeah.
scored 41 on the Rams and then just 13.
Yeah, a
I
lot of, to feel good about the defense, except for the injuries.
Yeah, good, they stopped them on fourth down. They stopped that boot that Kyler did on that fourth down boot, like Carlton Davis gets to him and stops him short. And, the one that they had to review, or that Dan Campbell challenged, I should say. Just strong effort from the defense and very encouraging.
You know what they're going to need out of the defense this Monday? Another strong
Yeah.
effort, because they have given up to the C in the last 3 games to the Seahawks, dating back to 2022, which was in the 2021 season. 136 points to the Seahawks, or 45.3 points per game over 3 games against this team. And it's been the same coaching staff, it's been different rosters and an evolving roster.
Right.
Lions law, excuse me, Lions lost last year to the Seahawks in the opener. That wasn't the opener of the season. It was the opener at home, 37-31 in overtime. Lions had to make the 2-score comeback to tie the game. Seahawks won the toss in overtime, went right down and scored to win it.
Yep.
So let's preview the game coming up on Monday. Lions are favored by 3.5, so they get the advantage, the betting advantage of being at home. 15 p.m. on that Monday night, ESPN crew Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salter is down on the field. No Manning cast for this one. They're passing
No.
on this. No.
Well, it's a doubleheader Monday night again,
Well, they're
right?
doing
So
the
the
other game.
yeah, there's two games on Monday night, plus there's Yeah, just like they had the doubleheader in week three. And so Manning
Why are they
cast
doing
did,
this now?
I don't know. And so the Manning cast will come back after the doubleheaders. They're trying to, I don't know, they're getting a little quirky with the the schedule, because like then after they get done with their Monday doubleheaders, that's when they start playing the Europe the games in Europe in week five. So it's like they're trying to have something out of the ordinary, like every single week, it almost it seems like. So like you have Thursday,
Keeping it fresh for
Saturday,
us.
I guess. I mean, like Thursday, Saturday, Thursday, Sunday, Monday games aren't enough variation. They got to add some other wild card game in there as well to try and keep people on their toes and keep, you know, eyeballs on the screen, even though I don't think they're struggling to gain viewers at this point. But
Right.
yeah, another doubleheader.
Right. Referees Alex Kemp, seventh season as referee. 12.67 penalties per game under the league average of 13.04, but man, pretty close to the average.
Yeah, most of the refs are pretty right in that range at this point.
Key additions this offseason, a name we know very well, left guard Laken Tomlinson, also center Connor Williams, backup tight end Farrell Brown, linebacker Jerome Baker, and safety Rayshon Jenkins.
Yeah, and it mirrors basically the guys that they lost. They lost Damian Lewis, who was their left guard, who Laken Tomlinson replaces. They lost Evan Brown, their center,
X Lion.
who Connor Williams replaces. Just saw Evan Brown this last weekend in Arizona. Their tight end too was Will Disley. Now it's Farrell Brown. They lost Mario Edwards, replaced him with a draft pick. They lost Bobby Wagner, replaced him with Jerome Baker. Lost Jordan Brooks, and they drafted another player in the fourth round. And then they added another safety because they of how they utilize their safeties a little bit different than the last scheme, because it's a new coaching staff, right? And we'll talk about that in a second, but slightly different scheme, not too much variation, but and nothing that will be really unfamiliar with to us. But it's they did make a few changes schematically that, you know, showed up in roster moves.
All right. In the draft, the first round, 16th overall pick, they took defensive lineman Brian Murphy, the second from Texas. Third, they didn't have a pick until number 81 in the third round, took guard Christian Haynes from UConn. Had a pair of picks in the fourth round, which they took linebacker Tyrese Knight from UTEP and tight end AJ Barner, which the Michigan fans know him very well. The fifth rounder, they took cornerback Nehemiah Pritchett from Auburn. Three picks in the sixth round. Offensive tackle Sataoa Laumea from Utah, cornerback DJ James from Auburn, and offensive tackle Mike Jarrell from Findlay.
So, guys, we talked about during our draft shows were
Definitely Byron Murphy.
Byron Murphy, Christian Haynes, AJ Barner, Jeremiah Pritchett. All four of those guys were guys that I think the Lions were interested in. And so that's half this draft class, I think, were guys that we would have been very happy with if they would have ended up in Detroit. So that's it's good. It's a good draft for them, and it's a solid draft to, you know, start off the new regime. So yeah, Pete Carroll gone, right?
Out, forced out.
15 years, a Super Bowl championship, a Super Bowl loss, a job in the
Dramatic
front
Super Bowl loss,
office.
one of the great Super
Yeah.
Bowl losses of all time.
Right. And they had enough. They had enough and
Well,
said
you have to change at some point. Even though he was still pretty good, they
he had
weren't cha- they
a
didn't bottom out yet, but maybe
Right.
they were getting
Like
there.
they were 9-8 the last 2 years, made the playoffs in one, not in the other. And the year before that, they were had a losing record. And so they didn't make the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. And the 1 year they did, I believe they were bounced early. So that was enough. They figured that people had kind of figured out what the Legion of Boom defense was no more. And they kind of under, you know, so many enough teams had mimicked the defensive scheme, that it wasn't fresh and original anymore. And so they decided to go in a different direction. You want me
All
to talk?
right.
You want to talk
No,
about
no.
no, let's you want to talk about the coaches? Like, we'll talk a little bit more about like who they hired and everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
New head coach Mike McDonald, who is well known once again to us in the area, former defensive coordinator at Michigan, but was the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens last season.
Yeah, McDonald must start his career at Georgia, then he goes to Baltimore as an intern, eventually works his way up in Baltimore. For like 6 or 7 years, he was in on Baltimore's defensive staff. Goes to Michigan for 1 year. In that 1 year, he becomes really well known because he took Aiden Hutchinson and basically just elevated his game to a point where he was just a monster and did enough to be the second overall pick in the draft, right? So he then goes back to the Ravens after 1 year in Ann Arbor. As defense coordinator for 2 years, then gets the job with the Seahawks. He's 36 years old, currently the youngest NFL head coach in the league. So he decides he's going to hire his coordinators, and he does it without really knowing either of them. He basically holds interviews, he looks at the pool of candidates, he figures out who he likes, who he meshes with. And so there's not any nepotism between him and his coordinators.
It's the
But I
way to
tell you
do
what,
it.
there is some nepotism when he fills out his staff, because you'll find guys like Chris Patronage, who was the Michigan's linebacker coach, is the linebacker coach in
There's something
Seattle.
about Connor Stallions, too.
He was the guy who brought Connor Stallions in. That's why he exited in a hurry. He also has a long relationship with Leslie Frazier. Leslie Frazier, former defensive coordinator, and Frazier, he's known from his time back in Baltimore, and he's come on to be like a advisor. So he's got a veteran voice around the building to help him make decisions, and he's put together a pretty interesting staff. Staff's
Wait, you're
young.
skipping over another
No,
nepotism
no.
player.
Oh,
Okay,
well,
you're
no,
getting there.
I'm getting there.
Right.
Yeah, I'm getting there. And so it's a young staff and it's very inexperienced. The offensive coordinator is Ryan Grubb, who doesn't he coached solely in college before. This is his first job in the NFL, and he's calling plays. Drude, their defensive coordinator, has coached in the NFL, but he's never held the defensive coordinator position. But he's really more of an assistant because McDonald's the guy calling the plays anyways. And then the special teams coach is Jay Harbaugh, the biggest, one of the bigger nepotism moves of the that you can deal with.
Wait,
And
he's a nepotism hire. Who's he related to?
yeah, both head coaches that Mike McDonald has worked with in his past, both Jay and Jim, right? And so so he's their special teams coordinator. Fun fact, assistant special teams coordinator, Devin Fitzsimmons,
Got a
who was
couple of
a,
Lions, ex-Lions
yeah.
on that Seahawks staff.
Yeah. And so, so at the coordinator spot, brand new guys he liked, sprinkled in throughout the staff, lots of connections.
Right.
But
Josh
it's
Bynes,
young.
former Lions linebacker, is an assistant defensive assistant slash linebackers coach.
There you go. Yeah. So let's talk about Ryan Grubb real fast. So Ryan
Yeah, go
Grubb
ahead.
is their offensive coordinator. He calls the plays. Grubb is basically tied at the hip with Kalen DeBoer, the Alabama head coach. Okay, the guy who took over for Saban. So DeBoer and Grubb meet like 17 years ago in college. Together, they start to, work offenses, and they start to develop different schemes. And over the 17 years, they make a bunch of different stops. They end up in Washington, and they build Washington's offense into a powerhouse. They have, multiple wide receivers drafted in this last draft. The offense is good enough to take them to the national championship. Ironically, they lose to Michigan, who has built its, and they lose to Washington, or they lose to Michigan because Michigan's defense was so elite. And Michigan's defense is, of course, modeled around Mike McDonald. So Mike McDonald's defense was actually the undoing of Grubb's Washington offense in the national championship of last year. So a little bit of irony there. But Grubb's never coached in the NFL. He's now not only coaching, but calling plays. And he seems to be doing well. Like he's very creative in what he does. And, but the thing is with a first year play caller, you know, they're going to get tested. They're going to make some mistakes. And so they haven't really made a ton, but some of that is because they haven't really faced a gauntlet of opponents yet either. So, you know, they beat the Broncos, the Patriots, and then they beat the Dolphins without Tua. And they were actually went through both their backup quarterbacks in that game. So, but so far he looks good, but he, so he'll, you know, and they got plenty of talent, plenty of offensive talent on defense. Giroud, he's born in England, played in NFL Europe, started coaching as a lower level intern, eventually works his way up and hooks on to Dan Quinn. Now, Dan Quinn used to be the Seahawks defensive coordinator during the Legion of Boom years. And so he is learning defense from Dan Quinn. And so McDonald, when McDonald's making a hire, he's looking, one of the things that appealed to him was Giroud would know the style of defense that Seattle's been running for the last decade because he's so familiar with Dan Quinn's offense. At the same time, he can help McDonald blend what McDonald wants to do with his new defense. And so it seemed like a really good match. And he is, like I said, a first year defensive coordinator. But again, when it comes to play calling, it falls on McDonald. So interesting staff, really young. I mean, across the board, young, really inexperienced, but they're winning and they have talent. And so they're finding ways to get it done.
All right, let's start talking about that team that's getting everything done. We're going to start with the Seahawks offense, led by quarterback Geno Smith, 34 years old, 3-0 on the season, completing almost 75% of his passes. Although he's completed three passes to the other team, very strong Geno Smith year so far. He's had some great games against the Lions in the past.
Yeah, he can make throws at all at every level. He's been sacked 8 times, which is I think you know, that's about what you would expect, but he tends to be, you know, he's considered more like a mobile quarterback, but outside of week one where he rushed for 30 yards, he hasn't done much. He rushed for 8 against the Patriots and -2 against the Dolphins. So he's not mobile. I mean, he's mobile, but he's not like they're not designing quarterback runs for him, like, you know, Kyler Murray. So the Lions won't have to worry about playing like that contain element. They're going to be able to just kind of fire off the ball and try and get Geno disrupted. So, but he's got a lot of pass catchers and he's got good patience. He's willing to stick in the pocket. And like I said, he can make throws at all levels. So when they run like a layered route tree and you have receivers at all three levels, if you can't get to him, he can just pick the one that you're not covering and complete the pass. So he's a quality veteran that has really settled in Seattle, and I think the scheme fits him well. I think you're muted, buddy.
His backup is Sam Howell, who was the starter, part-time starter for the Commanders last year. Was a not a first round, he was a draft pick of the Commanders. They really gave up on him in a hurry.
Yeah, they traded him. I forgot what they got for him, but that was a move that they wanted, that the Washington or Seattle wanted to acquire.
All right. Running backs. One of my favorites is the starter, Kenneth Walker III, but there's some injury concerns about him. So Lions will also likely see Zach Charbonnet, former Wolverine, and I believe UCLA Bruin, and Kenny McIntosh might see a little bit of him.
So what they tend to favor their starting running back. Starting running back tends to get between like 65 and 85% of the snaps, depending on their opponent. They will gear their offense towards whatever opponent they're facing, but they prefer to just lean on one back for the majority of snaps, and then they'll use a number two to kind of pick up the slack. Kenneth Walker is coming off an injury though, and so he's ex they're anticipating him playing. And if he does, I think he could be a little bit more limited. And Zach Charbonnet has been playing well, so I actually wouldn't be surprised if they went a little bit more even against the Lions, a little bit more 50-50 type of split, because both backs are good. Kenneth Walker is, of course, the better back, in my opinion. But they like to run, they want to run, and they're going to try and do it for sure. But the Lions, they're really good. That's where their focus is. And they've done a good job of holding teams to fewer yards than the average by far. And so I expect this to be where the Lions approach is again. Focus on stopping Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet and do their best to get to Geno and pressure him.
Geno, not a big threat to run.
Mm-mm.
Had to mention that. All right, wide receiver core for Seattle. DK Metcalf, Jackson Smith, Njigba, Tyler Lockett. Those are the three main guys. Jake Bobo, LaVisca Chenault, Darique Young. Those are the reserves. It's a group of wide receivers, probably not as good as the Rams wide receivers as a whole, probably better than the Cardinals wide receivers. And
Yeah.
it's probably the third best receiving core they'll face so far this year. I would say the Godwin and Mike Evans and whoever their third, who's the third guy? No, I can't remember the third guy.
Oh,
And Tampa, regard whatever. Moving on.
I really like this group because it's a very strong trio. I agree with you that individually they're not as good as the Rams or the Bucks, two superstars, but I think all three of them are equally very good, and that's I think what really makes them a threat. Metcalf is of course your big play threat down the field. He's your big, strong, powerful, fast guy. Lockett is your savvy vet who also gets down the field. And then Smith Enigma is their slot receiver. Now, in the past, they typically would run Metcalf and Lockett like 80, 85% of the time. And then Smith Enigma would run between like 60% of the time. But Lockett is 32 years old. I feel like he just got in the league, but he's already 32. And so what we've seen this year is they've kind of switched up the snaps. Now it's Metcalf and Smith Nigma that are seeing around 85%, 90% of the snaps. And Lockett is in the lower end, getting only about like 55 to 60% of the snaps. So you're starting to see the kind of end of Tyler Lockett, or at least he's getting kind of phased out a little bit. Still very good with the ball in his hands, still very reliable. He's the guy that his like if Gino needs to make or get a pass and make sure that it's completed, Lockett's the guy he'll go to. But Smith Nigma is starting to become more of a feature player. They're starting to use him a lot underneath, and they're using that him as a slot option to kind of force defenses to pinch in, and then they take the shots for DK over the top. And so it's kind of turning into a St. Brown, JMO type of situation with, you know, focusing on Nigma and Metcalf, and then Lockett just becomes Mr. Reliable. And it's a really good trio. After that trio, I'm not impressed with the other reserves, but like Bobo, I thought played well the last time he was in Detroit. Chenault's always a unique guy because he's got like a running back's body, but he plays wide receiver. So that's always a unique guy to keep an eye on. He'll be their kick returner as well, but I think he's just okay. You know what I mean? I think what people want him to be is more than I think what he actually is. So, but the three main guys, they're definitely trouble.
Chenault, Bobo, Young have combined for 5 receptions for 23 yards in 3 games this season. Lockett, as you pointed out, has 13 receptions. 10 of them are for first downs. So he's definitely the security blanket of getting first downs for Geno Smith. Next up are the tight ends. Starters Noah Fant, the backups Pharaoh Brown, the aforementioned rookie A.J. Barner, and Brady Russell.
So Fant's been limited with an injury. Pharaoh Brown's been limited with an injury. So you've seen a little bit more A.J. Barner, I think, that maybe they were planning on. But it's not like one guy is out there like all the time. It's more of an even split, a little bit more favor towards the veterans as opposed to Barner, but Barner's a guy they like and they're not afraid to throw the ball his way.
Barner has a start. Fant's got two of them. Barner's got the other one, although that doesn't mean much.
Yeah, and I think Pharaoh Brown was injured a game or two. I think he came
two
back.
Two games, yeah. He's only played in one so far.
So it, but yeah, Barner's guy they like for sure.
Down on the offensive line, left to right, Charles Cross at left tackle, former Lion Lake and Tomlinson at left guard, Connor Williams in the pivot, right guard is Anthony Bradford, and the right tackle is Stone Forsyth.
So another week where a Lions opponent is without their right guard, their starting right tackle. I mean, Abraham Lucas is their starter, has been their starting right tackle for a couple years now, but he's on the PUP list, not expected to return until midseason or even late in the season. They went to George Fant throughout training camp, and he started the season. George Fant just went on IR last weekend, and so now they're on to Stone Forsyth as their third option at right tackle. He's okay. Got a lot of hype in the draft process, ends up going in the 6th round because the hype really didn't meet the actual player. And in situations where he is going to be tasked with guarding Aiden, is a huge advantage for Aiden Hutchinson. But there's probably not a head coach in the league that knows Aiden Hutchinson better than Mike McDonald. And so I absolutely think that if they have Aiden up against Forsyth, they're going to have a tight end in there to chip Aiden every single time, because Aiden is a monster and he's just the pressures, the sacks, they just keep coming, and Forsyth won't be able to handle them. So they're going to, I fully expect them to get creative and try and keep blockers in, like extra guys to chip Aiden and try and slow him down. Charles Cross on the opposite side, one of the better tackles in the league. He's a young guy, former first rounder from a couple years ago, ascending player. He's really good. I'm impressed with him. He's easily the best offensive lineman on this roster. The interior is a bit suspect. Lakin Tomlinson is not the man he was even a few years ago. Connor Williams has his fun moments, but he also looks susceptible. Anthony Bradford is a guy I really liked a year ago. But he was always a developmental guy. He's a big, powerful right guard. I don't think he's playing where he at a level where he needs to. Bradford also missed practice once already this week. Lakin Tomlinson's been limited in practice this week. So not only are their interior offensive linemen not playing up to snuff, but they have a couple injuries as well. They're pretty good run blockers. Pass blocking is where they're suspect. Charles Cross is really the best one, but as a collective unit, their PFF pass blocking grade is like 53.2, which is well under the average. And so they could struggle. If Aleem plays, it's going to be a fun day for Aleem. Could be a fun day for Levi. And if they don't chip Hutchinson, could be a fun day for Hutchinson. But you've got to, you know, you got to, they're going to have to pressure Geno, and up the middle is really going to be the spot that they're most vulnerable, in my opinion, because like I said, I fully expect them to be aware of Aiden. So look for Aleem and Levi here to be got really important pieces.
Lions only pick up one sack last week, but that's a little deceiving, you know, against a banged up Cardinal offensive line, because they were trying to do more of a contain on Kyler Murray for the most part. And I'm probably going to come after Geno a little bit more, unless Geno's magical Geno that he can be against the Lions.
I wish Chris Myers would have picked up on that fact instead of just spouting off about how the Lions weren't able to get
Weren't
pressure and they
creating
weren't
pressure.
doing like I was like, come on, Chris. That broadcast was rough last week. I'll tell you. I was not thrilled with it.
No, it's fine. Chris Myers is not the number one man at Fox, even though he's probably got more experience than all those other guys, more experience than what's it, what that Burkhart was number
Oh, I don't know.
one with
Kevin
Tom
Burkhardt.
Brady. Yeah, Kevin Burkhart. Yeah. All right. Anyhow, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, they've got the Seahawks listed as a base 3-4. I'm sure they do a lot of different things because that's a McDonald thing, right? They run a lot of different looks on that front.
It's disguises. I mean, yeah, their base is a 3-4 where they spend most of their time in a 2-4. Two down linemen with your two edge rushers and then your two off-ball linebackers. They rotate their edge rushers a lot to keep them fresh. They will drop their edge rushers and blitz their linebackers. They will do a variety of different things up front to try and disguise where the pressure's coming from. They'll overload size. They don't blitz a lot. They only blitz like 19% of the time, which is like I think they're 25th in blitz rate. But the reason they don't blitz is because they disguise where the pressure's coming from so that they don't really need to blitz. They rely on their edge rushers to get home, and they rely on their scheme to scheme opportunities to create that they're going to create confusion and then try and just get home with talent and speed. They've done good so far. Again, the quarterbacks they've faced have been pretty subpar. You're talking about Bo Nix, rookie Bo Nix, starting in Denver, Jacoby Brissett with the Patriots, and then with no Tua, it was Skylar Thompson until he got injured, and then it was good old former Lions Tim Boyle who
Nine
was
lives,
at
Tim
the helm.
Boyle.
And so it's not like they were dealing with this like murder's row of quarterbacks here to start the season. And so the pass rush got home and those quarterbacks hold on to the ball too long. The offensive line gets a little leaky. There's a lot of things that went into it, but they've got a pretty fair, I think they have 11 sacks on the
Yep,
year,
11 sacks through three
which is
games.
not bad. Mafe and oh, we'll get to those guys in a minute,
Yeah,
but
well, let's first
go ahead.
along the defensive front. Jarran Reed, Jonathan Hankins, Leonard Williams. Williams and Hankins have started all three games. Reed's picked up two starts. Second unit is Byron Murphy, Cameron Young, Mike Morris, Miles Adams. So Brian Murphy is that, or Byron Murphy, excuse me, is their first round draft pick. Hasn't started a game yet.
Yeah, but he plays starter level snaps for them. But he got injured last game and he's expected to be out. So he probably won't play, which is could be very good news. Leonard Williams, who is their best pass rusher from a down lineman standpoint, he also got injured last game and didn't return. And he did not practice on Thursday. So he's questionable to play as well, but we'll see. His injury is a rib injury, so that's something he could overcome. But both those guys are important pieces. Both those guys are potentially going to miss, and so you're going to see a lot of Jarran Reed, and then we'll see if Williams can make it in. If not, we'll see some Mike Morris, we'll see some Jonathan Hankins, and it's. It's interesting to me because like these are good, like they're solid players, all of them, right? Leonard Williams is actually maybe even above average. But I think the way that they're utilized in this scheme, they're susceptible to the run. So good pass rush. I don't think they're holding their gaps as well as maybe they have in the past. Williams getting a little older, Reed's getting a little older, and Murphy is inexperienced and probably not going to play anyway. So this could be a vulnerable point for the Lions if they just want to, give the ball to Montgomery and attack downhill. They could th that should be a big part of their game plan to try and really test this interior again, test the interior's ability to stop the run.
All right, moving up to the second level. Seahawks starters include Tyrell Dodson, Jerome Baker, Boye Mafe. They list Uchenna Nwosu as one of the starters. He has not played yet this season, it looks like. Also picking up starts, Derek Hall, Draymond Jones, Tyrese Knight. They also have Drake Thomas and Trevis Gibson. So a big crew of linebackers and edge players.
Yep. So this is kind of what we've seen almost every week at this point, right? So let's look at the edge guys first. Boye Mafe is their best pass rusher. Nwosu is their technical other starter, but he has been hurt. He has not played yet. He did return to practice on Wednesday, but when it came time to do an official practice on Thursday, he was on the did not practice list. So coming back from injury after missing 3 weeks, who knows if he'll be ready to go for this game. But even if he doesn't, Derek Hall's been very productive. Mafe has 17 pressures and 3 sacks. Derek Hall has 12 pressures and 3 sacks. Those are the top two guys in creating pressure. Draymond Jones has, I think, 9 pressures and a sack. And, yep, 1 sack. And those three guys all play like a starter level of snaps. They all play like 66, 60, 65, 70% of snaps, like all three of them. If Nwosu comes back in, obviously their snaps are going to all kind of go down to make room for Nwosu's return. But they go deep. They go too deep at both those edge spots. And they've been doing a good job of getting pressure. Bowser is from Baltimore. He kind of followed McDonald here. And then Gibson is another veteran guy who's been around for a little while. They'll get some run, but it's not like they're big parts of the game plan. The off-ball guys, Jerome Baker, he's been injured. Oh, I should also mention that that while Nwosu didn't officially practice on Thursday, Mafe also did not officially practice on Wednesday. Even though he played last week, he was out with a knee injury on Thursday's practice. So something to keep an eye on. I haven't heard any indicators that they're not expecting him to play, but the fact that he didn't practice is certainly something to keep an eye on. On the interior, the off-ball guys, Dotson and Baker are their starters, but Baker has also been injured and not practicing, and he missed last game. And so they've had to turn to the fourth round pick Tyrese Knight to kind of pick up some slack. Dotson is the only like real starter and off the ball that's been a consistent starter, but he's unique in the fact that he's more of a coverage linebacker than a downhill run stuffer. Tremendous. He's really good at coverage. Like he's a guy who is an important part of their coverage scheme. But without Jerome Baker and you're relying on a rookie and you're to fill one spot and the other spot you have a pass covering linebacker. If you only have a four-man front and then your linebackers are not suited to stop the run, that's all the more reason to test their ability to do it. Because again, I think this is really where the weakness is, right? If Baker can come back, it certainly will help, but they like their linebackers to be part of their pass coverage, and they will put them in pass coverage a lot. So that means lighter boxes, more opportunity for Gibbs and Montgomery.
All right, now for the defensive back, starting with the corners. We got Reek Woolen, Trey Brown, Devin Witherspoon. Those are their three main corners with rookie Nehemiah Pritchett and D. Williams in reserve roles.
So their starting two are Woolen and Witherspoon. And when they shift to nickel, Brown comes in and takes one of the outside spots, and Witherspoon shifts inside to the slot. They really prioritize shutting down the middle of the field. right? You have linebackers who drop into coverage over the middle of the field. Now you put your you're putting your best corner or one of your best two corners in the slot. And when we get to safeties, we'll talk about how they'll drop a guy into the slot as well. They really, really put an emphasis on trying to take away the middle of the field. And that will be something the Lions will have to adjust to, because Dotson dropping back from the linebacker level, Witherspoon occupying and maybe trying to man up against St. Brown, they're going to have to get creative in finding ways to pass the ball. And it's going to be hard because both Reek Woolen and Witherspoon are very talented. Dotson is, like I said, very talented it from the linebacker perspective, and they have two really good safeties as well. Brown is maybe their weak link, but Brown's only on the field like half the game. Like, he's not out there all the time. And so the main four that they put out there, all highly talented cover players.
Safeties are Rayshon Jenkins and Julian Love, with Kayvon Wallace and Kobe Bryant off the bench.
So Jenkins is a guy who will play deep and then he will also drop into the box. Julian Love is a guy who will play deep and then also drop into the slot. And Kayvon Wallace is a guy who will play deep when they want to shift to three safety sets, which they do about a third of the time. So they'll spend of the like 80% of the time that they play nickel, half that 50% of that 50% of the snaps, it's a corner at the nickel spot. The other 30% of the time, it's a safety in the nickel spot. And so, like with the corners, where they will push one of their better guys inside, they do the same thing with safety. Julian Love and Jenkins are both, they're really good safeties, but when push comes to shove, it's Julian Love that they push into the slot in order to increase the coverage ability in them over the middle of the field. So you're never going to find a real weakness in the middle. If they have a guy in the slot, it's almost always going to be one of their better cover players. And so that's really where the problem becomes for St. Brown. So the way you open that up is you establish a run, right? If you establish the run, you're going to force them to kind of crowd the box, which means maybe you force Rayshon Jenkins to get down into the box. And if that happens, you're then keeping Julian Love back and Kayvon Wallace back, and then you're lowering the talent over the middle, and that could open up opportunities for St. Brown that way. But it all stems from being able to run. If they can't run, they're going to have trouble getting the ball to their main pass catchers, which are, St. Brown, Laporta, etc. You're going to need J-Mo to stretch, as always, to keep him honest, but they play well in the area that the Lions typically want to go with the ball.
All right, that's enough of the defense. Going over to the special teams, the kicker is Jason Myers, 33 years old, longtime NFL kicker. He's hit 85.7% of all of his kicks, 6 of 7. The only miss was past 50 yards long on the season is 56. Two-thirds of his kickoffs go for touchbacks.
He's great. I mean, he's super reliable. I forgot what game he missed it in, but I was surprised when he missed it, right? I was ex even though it was from like 50 yards, I was like, oh, he'll hit that, and then he missed it, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm all about that. But yeah, super reliable kicker.
7 seasons out of his 10 in the NFL, he's hit for over 80% of his field goals. He's a two-time Pro Bowler. Punter is Michael Dickson. He's punted 14 times for 705 yards. More importantly, a 50.4 yard average. Only one of those punts has gone inside the 20-yard line. Pair of touchbacks on the year.
It's another good punter. Like, they have another good special teamer. He can really hit that ball. I think he could be a guy that, could help them flip the fields. Not quite Jack Fox level, but still.
Dixon's a one-time Pro Bowler. You mentioned Laviska Shenault. He's their kick returner. pretty ho-hum on the season. Dee Williams is the punt returner.
Yep. I'm not overly impressed with either of their return units. More impressed with their kicking and coverage.
Are you impressed with their long snapper, Chris Stoll?
I don't know enough about him. Unfortunately, I couldn't find anything unique that I wanted to bring up.
All right, that's it for the Seattle Seahawks.
So it's an interesting game. It's going to be an interesting game because there's going to be a lot of concepts from Baltimore that McDonald brings on defense. And we know how, you know, well, Lions don't match up really well with Baltimore, but he just doesn't have all the pieces in place right now. And so the way his defense is set up is they want to take away the pass. And then I think that creates opportunities for the Lions to really gash him. The Patriots of all teams actually set up the kind of the blueprint on what could happen. They ran the ball for like 185 yards on the Seahawks, 185 yards and a touchdown. And then they went to their tight end a ton because they didn't match up well with the tight end. They were focused on the slot guys, and Hunter Henry had 7 catches for 98 yards in the first half. And so it could be they have to pick their poison on which one of the slot options, and they'll probably pick St. Brown. And so if Sam LaPorta can get healthy, Sam will have a chance to have a pretty good game. But again, I think everything starts with the run. You're going to have to stop the run on defense, and you're going to have to establish the run on offense. Those are both the priorities of the Lions. But in order for them to do what they want to do, they've got to get those things done first and foremost. Explosive plays will be a big deal. Seahawks like to get them. They take shots a lot. And the Lions have been good about preventing big plays. And that'll be a nice battle on the same coin. I think Lions are going to test Seattle's defense with JMO to try and free up some underneath stuff. And if you can connect on one of those, that'll certainly help. So it's a winnable game. I think Lions are the most, by far, the most talented team that Seattle will face. I don't really think Seattle's been tested with any of the three teams that they faced. I know the Miami score looks really lopsided at like 24-3, but if you watch the game, it was much closer than that. They were in the fourth quarter and Miami was inside the 5-yard line, down 2 scores, and good old Tim Boyle just couldn't pull it off a touchdown. And so it was a disaster for Miami all around. Miami shot themselves in the foot quite a bit. So
also worth noting that the Cardinals had the big blowout over the Rams the week before the Lions.
Right. Them. Right. And so, the Lions are a different team than these Seahawks have seen. And at home Monday night, the crowd's going to be into it. If they start establishing the run, the crowd's going to really get behind that. Cause man, that crowd feeds into that. And, you could see the Lions really assert their will. And I think that'll be a big part of what if they can control the game, it's a game they can and probably should win, in my opinion, even though the Seahawks are undefeated right now.
So what's your score prediction?
Oh, you want me to go for, okay. You won, by the way, last week.
Well, this was what you were given the breakdown. Like, was this going to lead him into? So am I going to go
I
first?
I absolutely can. I already wrote mine down, so I can give you mine. I think it's going to be tight. I think the Lions will win. I don't think the Lions will cover the spread. I think it's going to be tighter than that. I'm going 28-27 Lions.
All right. That's not a bad pick. I do think the score will be a little bit higher because those Monday night games, they get that extra day.
Yep.
Those scores creep up a little bit more than they do on Sundays. And it's been a defensive league here in the first 3 weeks, but not surprising since a lot of teams don't throw their offense out on the field in the preseason anymore. This is the preseason's kind of just finishing up, you know, after week 3. Line, yes, Ford Field will be loud, but we were at a game last year at Ford Field when it was outrageously loud and the Seahawks won.
It was.
There was a game at Ford Field 2 years ago against the Seahawks where it was very loud and the Seahawks still won. There's a lot of players playing for the Seahawks, fewer than there used to be, but are going to be comfortable in this Ford Field environment. Not saying it's a home away from home for them, but they're going to be less affected by this wild crowd. Hopefully not. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully they're false starting all over the place. But they, you know, from what we've seen, they have been. And at least offensively for the Seahawks, I should say defensively for the Lions, they're probably going to be pretty comfortable in this game because they're going to be able to do what they've done in the first 3 weeks, right? Run that base defense, you know, against the Seahawks offense because the personnel is similar, you know, to the first two teams they play. The personnel is even similar to the Cardinals. They're just of a higher caliber than the Cardinals are. Lions offensively, I don't know. I could go either way. McDonald knows what he's doing. You know, like it, and like you said, though, they want to stop the pass, which kind of plays in the Lions' favor because the Lions want to establish the run. You know, it's, we all know, anybody listening knows that.
Yep.
It's going to be a close one. You outsmarted me because you looked at my pick last week, the 24-23 victory, and you went along the same way. That's what I would have gone. So I feel pretty good about the Lions in this one, but as part of our game, Seahawks 27, Lions 26.
Oh, yeah. So you're going against them. All right.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a tight game. I don't see the Lions winning by more than three. I mean, they might, you know, they might win by 10, who knows, but like, so I'm going to go on the other side. You already took the 1 point win for the Lions. I'll take the other side, take the win for the Seahawks.
Tell me your score one more time.
Hopefully somebody's going to listen back to it. I think it was 27-26.
I can re-listen if you want, but
no, don't. It's better if people complain. It's more fun.
So you like the Seahawks? Oh.
Didn't say I like them. I think it's going to be a tight game, just like you say. It's a tight game. I don't think the Lions are going to win big if they win. So I'm going to just go to the other. This is just for beating you in this.
You just this is more strategy as opposed
this
to.
This is just the strategy. And I've said it every week. So like I just sound like an idiot. But I keep, why, the Seahawks can win this game. You know, every week so far. Like the other teams, but the score is indicated. Like they're all within one score so far. Like Seahawks are good enough to win this game. Will they? I hope not. You know, and I do like the Lions' chances, but for our picking reasons, I'm going to pick the Seahawks with the win.
All right. Good. I think we got a review, if I recall.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we got a fresh one from it's a good name. I think it's somebody who switched the first letters of their first and last names.
Han Rascal. I just looked
at Han Rascal. That's what it is. Five star rating. It was a good one. And Han, we appreciate it.
I like the it's nerd level 1000.
Yeah,
that's great. I
hope that's what we deliver.
I embrace that. I embrace that that moniker there. I appreciate that.
All right, and a couple more reviews on Spotify. I noticed everything. Thanks for everybody reviewing. Please keep it
awesome.
Up. And just, you know, thanks for listening.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, there's that. I don't have anything else to talk about.
You want how your Spartans doing? I didn't
that was a rough one up in Boston over the weekend. They're just letting the quarterback Aiden Childs grow on the fly, and they were going to win that game. He was leading him right down. It was 11 yards. He was just popping down the field, and then he tried to force one into Montori Foster in the end zone when he's double covered, and it cost him the game. Well, hopefully he learns from it.
I didn't. I thought they won. I apologize.
No. Wow. Are you that out of it? Listen,
I am. I was being cavalier about
Eric
it. I apologize.
Used to know, like everything that was going on when it came to football, you know.
I did.
Like, but now he's got this the job over these last several years.
No, you know what it was.
No focused.
It was George's birthday this month, and we were we did her
birthday month.
Yeah, we did her family party on Saturday. So I didn't watch much. We happened to do cake right at the end of the Michigan game. So I saw like the last, I don't know, half a quarter. I saw the last half of the fourth quarter of the Michigan game. So I really didn't
Well,
even
that's
get to
all you
watch
needed to
much.
see.
And that was enough, right? Like that, I was happy to see that part. But yeah, like we had family over, and so I was, yeah, I was very out of touch and with family stuff this weekend. So job certainly takes away from it as well, but yeah, family stuff is, the kids are getting older, and I thought they were supposed to get more independent, but they not
Well,
yet.
I don't know. They're not all at that age. Like, it's
Right.
coming, Eric. In a few years, like, you're gonna have all the spare time on your hands, and you're not gonna know what to do. You know.
Yeah, right now that I'm not there. I'm in that in-between phase. But yeah, my college football watching is a little bit down this year. I think I'll get back into it, but as the season wears on and we start settling in, it gets colder outside and stuff. But I've lapsed a little bit here in the early part of the season, college football.
Spartans got a rough one on Saturday night.
Who do they play?
Hosting the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Oh man. And then Georgia Alabama's this weekend too, right? So like that's going to be another couple fun games to keep your attention.
Yeah,
Saturday
well,
night.
hopefully it's a fun game. The Spartans usually get annihilated by Ohio State, but we'll see what the new coaching staff can do if they can just at least keep it close. I'm not expecting
Well,
them to shock the world, but.
Saturday night in East Lansing. So I would,
Yes.
yeah, so that's going to be, that's going to be a little bit more exciting, a little bit more energy, I would think.
Yeah. They've had some energy-filled games where they just came out flat and, fell flat on their face against the Buckeyes. So
Well,
we'll see what the new regime can do.
yeah, I'm excited. And
There's only been 4 weeks, so I still have some trust in them. Like, I haven't given up on them yet.
I will be pulling for I will be pulling for the Spartans in that game
Yeah,
for
the
sure.
1 week a year, except for maybe a bowl game, you might pull for the Spartans as well. Michigan, who do they have? Because
Minnesota.
they're playing Minnesota, okay, because they both have the bye week at the same time, Michigan and Michigan State. This for whatever reason this year. Wish they wouldn't do that, but okay, a little brown jug game. That's at the big. How can
Yeah.
you play 11 of your 12 games at the big house? You know.
It certainly feels like it.
They haven't played. They were week five. They haven't played a road game yet.
No, but that's Michigan money,
That
man.
is Michigan. Yep.
That's them. Like I tried to explain this because my mother-in-law said the same thing to me. They said, "When's Michigan play on the road?" And I'm like, "They don't go on the road to Washington, which is actually next week."
That week. Yeah, next week.
But I tried to explain to her like a team like Arkansas State, if they host Michigan and they sell out, like they're only going to make $1 million. You know what I mean? In like ticket sales and stuff like that. They're not even going to make that much, right? But like Michigan can say, well, we'll give you $1 million to come play in Ann Arbor because
More than that, oh, isn't it?
yeah. Well, let's just say it's a mil. I'm
I
using
guess it
just a
depends on the
million.
school. Yeah.
Like they may say, well, we'll give you $1 million because we're going to make 10. You know what I mean? So like it's beneficial to them. Arkansas still makes the money that they would have made. Michigan makes the money that they would have made. And college football, the most important thing in college football reigns supreme again, where everyone is all about the green. And so,
What? That's not the college football I know. They're not all about the money.
and yeah, I mean, look, I think didn't I don't know if they have a home and home with Texas or what that's all about, but
Well, I
like,
was going to ask that question. Like, do they go to Texas next year?
yeah, I don't
Because
re
that's what
I
I would
would
want if I was
that's
Texas. Like,
they
if we're going
typically
to go to
do.
Harvard, you have to come to Austin.
Yeah, that's typically what they do with the big schools. Now USC being in the Big Ten, like
Now they're in the Big Ten.
they
Yeah,
just get
that's
the
right.
trade, right? So but yeah, like Arkansas State, yeah. Michigan just pays them off. That's just, you come to our house and let us bully you around and we'll give you money and thus college football.
Right, 2025. This is a one time. Oh, no. 2027, Michigan goes to Texas.
There you go. Yeah, it all evens out at some point.
It all evens, and they'll host Buffalo in Eastern Michigan. But it, 2025, people are probably shouting at the at their listening device right now. Mm-hmm. They go to Oklahoma. The Michigan will go to Norman and face the Sooners. Yeah, so that'll be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michigan has four road games this year because the 9-game Big Ten schedule this year is the year where they get 5 at home and 4 on the road. Next year, it's the opposite.
Right.
All right.
We're getting to the, you know, we're almost at October when things start to get really interesting. And if the Tigers are relevant.
I know. That's a lot more, more interesting more watch.
Yeah, certainly.
Tigers finished up their series against the Rays. The big win, 4-3. Mm. Getting their magic number to 2. They have the White Sox next Friday through Sunday. I'm typing in the MLB schedule. I want to see what the playoff schedule is.
Yeah, I don't know how many games they have left. They have four
three,
games left?
Three. That's
oh, three, no, three games left. You need
three,
two.
Right. Against the White Sox.
All right.
And if the play if they make the playoffs, we're not going to jinx them. They will play Tuesday. Okay, so it starts on Tuesday.
Play-by-play announcer, blanking on his name. I had
Jason
it.
Benetti.
He's really good. I mean,
yeah, he's good.
He's it. Like I feel like that's been missing. No knock on Matt Shepard or anything, but I feel like the chemistry has
not
been,
since Mario and Rod.
Right, Mario and Rod had great chemistry up until they tried to beat each other up in the booth.
There's still chemistry there. Passion is chemistry, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like there's a real good vibe, and it makes, you know, it's not just, you're not forcing things and you have good announcers. It makes everything an easier listen or an easier watch. And it's a fun time. So I hope all the Lions fans or all the Tigers fans out there are really enjoying it.
Yeah. That it'll be exciting October, or at least at the very least an exciting next week. Right. Cause it is a best of three series, and if the Tigers make it, all three games will be on the road, whether it be at Houston or in Baltimore. Mm. And they could go out in 2 days, like Tuesday, Thursday, or Wednesday, Friday. Mm. They could be gone just like that. They could disappear. It'll be interesting and fun. A lot more than what we expected earlier in the year.
Certainly make filling the bye week a lot easier, right? Like, you know, with no Lions game to look forward to, a lot of eyeballs going to be on Tiger Stadium there.
Right. All right. That's it. That's all we got. We're dragging on. Everybody's dropped off. They don't care about Spartan football or Michigan football or the Tigers, or at least not hearing us talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's it. All right. Monday Night Football, always a fun time. We didn't even make a big deal about how, like, they're on Monday Night Football, because now this is just a normal occurrence that they're on these nationally televised games.
Crazy.
So that's great. You enjoy yourself. You're going to have to get there early.
Thank you. Yeah. It's going to be tricky.
Let's go, Tigers. And until next time, let's go, Lions.